Our next presenter probably needs no introduction to most of you. If you've ever been a retro sheet, I suspect some of you probably have. It's the man, the founder of it, David Smith. Man's given presentations at, I believe, 19 previous ones of these conventions, been at other conventions, won the USA Today Sporting Weekly Award for a presentation in the 51 pennant race, won Sabre's highest honor, the Bob Davies Award, he's won the Henry Chaddock Award, he's done all kinds of great stuff. Here he is, David Smith.
I don't want to mess that up by actually starting now, so we'll see how this goes. As many people have already asked me, is this a continuation of what I did last year in Houston? And the answer is yes. And I really liked the results I got in Houston last year, but if you were there, you remember that I was a little unsure about the end. I thought I had some real clear patterns, but I wasn't really comfortable with the conclusions that I had. And so I figured that was the end of it. But I came up with something else, which you're going to see, that actually pushes me a little further. So since I know not everybody here today was there last year, and even if you were, if you're like me, you won't remember everything from a year ago or even from 30 minutes ago. Yeah, that's the way actually, 30 minutes is good. It's 2 days ago that's the problem. So I'm going to start with a little bit of a rehash to make sure that we're all starting in the same place on this. So we're all looking at the same thing. So I think this is now me. Yes, this is me. So the first thing, do I have it now? There we go. Okay, so I'll do it back up. First thing I want to note, just context from last year. Throughout baseball history, the home team has scored significantly more runs in the bottom of the first than either team scores in any other inning. And when I say significantly, I really mean that in the appropriate statistical sense. By any possible statistical test you want, it is really, really a big deal. So here's the first graph, and I've showed this a couple times before. The red is the home team, the blue is the visiting team, by inning, runs per inning. Home team scores 0.6 runs per inning in the first inning. Home team, the visiting is a little over 0.5, and this is from 1909 to 2014. So this is my usual data size data set that I do this with. An incredibly consistent pattern in some senses, but not consistent in other senses, as we're going to see. So one of the conclusions out of all of this, how big a deal is it that you have a tenth of a run more per inning? That doesn't sound like a lot. But if you do the appropriate projection, I did this last year, and it's in the paper, which is on our website from last year. The increase in that first inning, that tenth of a run increase, accounts for 58% of the home field advantage. Let's think about that. Home team historically has won 53 or 54% of the games played. And the first inning accounts for like 58% of that advantage. So the old wise old saying, and I did this last year and I really love the line, the wise old saying that the home team advantage has to do with batting last, the home team advantage comes because they play the first inning. That's really, really what it comes down to. Rather unexpected, but that's much more than half of the total differential is the first inning. Now, this is not constant over all of baseball history. And in fact, if you break this down by decade, so it's basically every decade through last year, it was really low in the dead ball era. Now, this is the run first inning differential. In the dead ball era, the home team still outscored the visiting team in the first inning, but not by very much. You introduce the lively ball and it jumps up. All of a sudden, the home team advantage goes up, and it stays more or less constant. There's certainly variation, with the only big jump being that decade of the 1970s. Other than that, it's pretty much the same. That made no sense at all to me last year. I'm not sure it makes a lot more now. I have one thought on this, but I'm still not sure I understand this. The point of this is not just that things change over time, and we know that there are high-scoring eras in baseball and there's low-scoring eras in baseball. What is happening, clearly, is not just the level of scoring. It's not true that this home team advantage in the first inning is related to scoring overall, that there's something much different coming along here. So what I decided to do is last year, and I'll quickly finish this summary, is note how different the first inning is. The first inning is different from all the other innings in one real obvious way, namely the leadoff hitter bats first. And so several people quite properly suggested, even before I did the paper last year, that maybe what I'm seeing is a leadoff batter effect and not a first inning effect. Very reasonable speculation. I even anticipated that, and I did it before last year, and it's in my paper. If you compare first inning to other innings in which the leadoff batter bats first. So what if you have the fifth inning or the sixth inning or the seventh inning with the leadoff batter batting first? Compare those innings to the first, and it shakes out. Again, the details are last year. It shakes out very clearly. This is a first inning effect. It is not a leadoff batter effect. That's a really important difference. So if we can agree on that, that this is really a first inning effect, how can this be? What's really going on? What occurred to me, and I talked to a couple major league professionals, talked to Freddie Gonzalez, of the manager of the Braves, on this a lot. He's really a good guy to talk to. I said, it seemed to me that the one great variable in the first inning is that the visiting starting pitcher doesn't know exactly how long he's going to be from when he ends his warm-up till he's going to pitch. The home team starter can set his schedule. He knows exactly when his warm-ups end. He knows when the national anthem is. He knows when he's going to be pitching. The visiting starter could be ready in 3 minutes. He could be ready in 15 minutes. He doesn't know. And it seemed to me that was something to consider. And at least Freddie thought that was a reasonable proposition, that that is possibly true. So what I looked at last year was things that would correlate with long first innings. My thought was that if the top of the first inning takes a long time, that's more time for the visiting starter to sit around and cool off or get messed up or whatever. So if the top of the first takes a long time, then the bottom of the first will be better for the home team because the visiting starter is messed up. That's basically the hypothesis of this. So as I said last year, I don't have data that tells me how long each first inning takes. And so I used surrogates. And I did things like, how many runs are scored in the top of the first? Obviously, the more runs, the more time it takes. How many batters appear in the top of the first? The more batters, the more time. How many pitches are thrown in the top of the first? The more pitches, the more time. They all show a relationship. As those things get bigger, that is, as those surrogates for time get longer, then the disadvantage for the visiting team or the advantage for the home team becomes larger. Well, what I discovered over the offseason is that, in fact, I now can get the exact time of the first inning for the last 5 years. The Major League website has some amazing stuff if you know where to look on it. And they will show you, for example, for every pitch, they'll tell you what kind of pitch it was, curveball, fastball, tell you the speed, tell you the degrees, the inches of break, all these incredible things. And they also record the exact time in Greenwich Mean Time down to the second of when each pitch was thrown. Now, the programming to grab all of that from out of all, and these are XML files, and if you've ever worked with XML files, that's not a trivial thing to do. Now, I only have the last 5 years. They've been doing this longer, but they were a little inconsistent before that. So they're pretty good for, they're real good for the last 5 years. That's 12,150 games. I know usually I'm doing like 150,000 games in my data set, so 12,000 seems pretty small, but that's basically all I've got. So I can actually finally directly measure, is it true that if the top of the first takes a long time, that the home team will score more in the bottom of the first? Very straightforward question. And the answer, the only really meaningful slide I'm going to show you today, so pay attention, is that one. And the answer is yes. So there's some interesting numbers here. First of all, the average top of the first, which scores zero runs, which of course is the large majority of innings don't have scoring. The average top of the first, which has no scoring, takes about 6 minutes to play. There's variation on this. Some innings are 2 minutes, some innings are 10. But the overall variation, as it is still relatively small. I did not put error bars on these points because the error bars are so small, they're almost contained within the points. So there's a variation, but the standard error is not very big. So it takes 6 minutes to play an inning on average, top of the first, in which then have the home team score zero runs. Make sure you got this right. Time to play the top of the first and runs scored in the bottom of the first. That's the whole relationship I'm looking for here. The relationship between the time of the top of the first and the scoring in the bottom of the first. So 6 minutes it takes on average when you get nothing. If it goes to 7 minutes, nothing's happened. To score average one run is almost 8 minutes. Two runs, a little higher, three. Teams score four or more runs, it takes about 12 minutes. So, and again, that's kind of reassuring. You would expect it to take longer to score more runs. But the amazing thing is the strength of this relationship, that the actual real number of minutes it takes to play at the top of the first is a significant advantage to the home team. And the weird thing about this is that the most common way for the top of the first to take longer is that the visiting team is scoring a lot. And doesn't that sound good for the visiting starter? No, it's not. That, in fact, the visiting starting pitcher was hurt by sitting around in the dugout watching his teammates score. They should do that for him in the second. You know, that would be helpful. But of course, they've got their own leadoff hitter issues, and that's not going to be happening. So the result of this, the R-squared value of 0.86 says that 86% of the variance between these two variables is accounted for by this relationship, which is a really high value for this kind of stuff. So I can answer what I couldn't do last year. Is the actual elapsed time of the top of the first a significant factor in what happens in the bottom of the first? And the answer is yes, that it truly is. The longer the top of the first, the more scoring on the bottom of the first. Okay, since I didn't want to have just a one-slide presentation, I decided I was going to do one other thing to consider, and that's travel. Because the other big variation is that the visiting team has always traveled before they play the first game of a series. Duh. So I thought I would track down the number of miles traveled for every series from 1909 to 2014, and I did that. It was a scary spreadsheet. And I can tell you how many miles each team traveled, and did it matter in the first game? I only looked at the first game of the series because I figured if there's going to be a travel effect after the first game, I don't think that's going to matter. I also did a quick check to look if it mattered for the home team in the first game of a homestand. There's a small effect, but not very much. So the first thing I did, as I said, I compiled the number of miles traveled by each team in each year. And here's the next graph, which I find absolutely fascinating. From pre-California and post-California, okay? Up to 1957, the average team traveled around 10,000 miles a year. Actually, I should have made that a trivia question. How many people would have guessed that teams were traveling 10,000 miles a year? And it didn't change much from 1909 to 1957. It jumps up in 1958 because everybody has to go to California. Well, not the American League teams, but soon enough. And it is now reasonably stable since then. The difference between that, 58 to 69, is that, of course, the American League wasn't there for the first 3 years. And now it's settled fairly stably at around 30,000 miles per team. I expected changes over time. I didn't expect to have it being such two clearly different sections like that. So I decided I would continue to treat this as two eras, you know, the pre-California and post-California. And of course there's variation. I thought one way to show this variation is to, for each of these two eras, the early and the late eras, look at the team that traveled the fewest miles, the median team, and the most. And I chose 1909 as the beginning of this, and then last year to do this as well. And that's this figure. 1909, the Giants traveled 7,000 miles for the whole year. The Reds, 8,900 were the median. The Browns, you know, St. Louis was the distant hinterlands, and they're 11,000. 2014, the Cubs were the least. Everyone always wants to tell you it's Kansas City that travels the fewest miles. Kansas City's like fourth or fifth. That the Cubs, in fact, traveled the fewest miles last year, 22,000. The Nationals were the median at 31,000. And, of course, as everyone knows, the Mariners travel 52,500 miles. I mean, they are over every trip they go to. Their closest trip's like 900 miles. And so they are always going to be up there. So I looked at these things, and I decided if I'm going to try to measure the effect of travel on performance in the first game of a series, I can't just look at miles because there weren't any 1,000-mile trips in 1909. And I decided what I would do is to keep within an era, and to keep the two eras separate from each other, I divided the data into quartiles. So I went for each one of these eras and divided by into four groups. And we have this. Use the left-hand column first. Each one of these mile distances is a quarter of the game. So pre-California, a quarter of the trips for the visiting team were 125 miles or less. You know, Boston and New York and Boston and Philadelphia are not very far apart. This is the way this works. So the next quartile, 126 to 260, 260, the longest trip any team could take was 1,100 miles, which is St. Louis to Boston. Look at the modern times. The shortest quartile is 350 miles, then to 700, then to 1,200, then to there. Look at it this way. The first three quartiles in the old days, 400 miles was the top. That barely gets you into the second quartile today. And the longest one in the old days of 1100, in fact, just barely fits into the third quartile now. So the distance of a long trip has completely changed. Of course, so is the mode of travel, that back then it was mostly on train, and up here it's mostly on plane. Although there are still some bus trips. Los Angeles and San Diego are a bus trip. Philadelphia and New York is a bus trip. Baltimore and Washington, everybody stays home and just drives to the park themselves, I presume. I'm sure that's what they do in San Francisco and Oakland. I mean, there's not much to do. Following these things, I decided rather than looking at just miles, I would look at quartiles to find out what happened if you had a short trip. Short means being in the first quartile. Long trip means being in the fourth quartile for your era. I thought that was the best thing to do with that. And I then looked at the winning percentage of the home team, depending on how far the visiting team traveled. So do that again. If this whole effect that I'm working on is that somehow the visiting starting pitcher is disadvantaged by this, then what I thought I would look at is the winning percentage of the home team in the first game of a series, depending on how far the visiting team traveled to get there. I also considered whether or not they'd had a day off or not in doing their travel. I mean, going from L.A. to New York overnight is one thing. Doing it with the day in between is another thing. And so here's what I find. And the answer is, By quartile, I divide them into the four groups here. And for example, the top. Here's the 1909 to 1957. Top quartile with no days of rest and one or more days. The home team scoring average is 0.65 down to 0.62. That says that when the visiting team had no days off, the home team did better. When the visiting team had a day off, the home team did a little bit worse. Well, that's kind of encouraging. You go to the next one. Whoops, that doesn't work. Sort of. And then these are just the averages. So that's looking whether there's a day off or not for the first quartile, second, third, and fourth. Yeah, there's some kind of difference, but it is certainly not true that the short trips are the best news for the visiting team and the long trips are the worst news. That just isn't what shakes out of here. There's an effect. It's not a very big effect, and it's not this monotonically increasing one. Overall average for the home team is the 0.622 runs per first inning, and the visiting team is scoring that 0.52. Okay, so you do that again for the modern era. Same thing, the same meaning of all the numbers. And for the short trips, they're almost indistinguishable. For the next one, yeah, the home team is a little bit better when the visiting team didn't have a day off, and so on and so on. But you follow these averages, they are almost indistinguishable from each other. So what I find, interestingly enough, is that apparently the distance traveled, in terms of the quartile, doesn't matter very much. I looked east-west versus west-east, that doesn't matter. I looked at day-night versus night, that doesn't matter. The travel just isn't very important, which was my surprise. But the other really amazing thing out of all of this is that this tenth of a run differential still holds up. That in the old days, it was 0.62 to 0.52, in the modern days, it's 0.60 to 0.50. It's still a tenth of a run advantage for the home team. Okay, now here's the winning percentage. In the old days, quartile, distance traveled, winning percentage of the home team, that's as no relationship as any graph you're ever going to see. I mean, it doesn't matter. The home team wins about 54% of the games. We already knew that. Does it matter how long it took the visitors to get there? No. And so now let's do the last one, which is the current era. There is one, if you really want to close your eyes and squint, maybe that point really means something, except it only goes up to about 57%, winning percentage of 560 or something like that. So maybe the long trips in the modern era help the home team win a little more, but I'm not terribly convinced about all of that. So, conclusions. Clear and consistent home team scoring advantage in the first inning. I don't think there's any debate on that. Travel does not explain the scoring difference at all. The home team winning percentage is not affected by the travel of the visiting team. And the greater length of the top of the first, which we can now measure exactly, the greater length of the top of the first is the best explanation I can come up with for the enhanced advantage of the home team in the bottom of the first. Now, this paper either is on our website or will be soon. Will be soon. Our webmaster is going to have it up there very, very soon. Okay, I'm done. Oh, God, they're diving for the microphones. I'm in trouble. Yeah, go ahead. No, gotta use the microphone.
You go back to your money slide, the one with the effect of the length of time in the first inning.
The very first one?
Yeah. No, next one.
That one.
There. Or no. The money.
You want to come up here? Come on.
The most important slide, you said. There. Would the logical conclusion of this be that if you're the road team, you should set your lineup with your 7, 8, and 9 hitters first?
No. No. I did that study in 2006 in Seattle, and it matters who leads off. If your seventh hitter leads off, it is a disaster in terms of scoring runs, so no. But what you might do, Jim Bouton did it in 1963, Andy Pettitte did it, Tom Ruane, when did Pettitte do it? Pettitte had the same problem, first inning problem. He did a split warm-up. Bouton was getting bombed in the first inning, so he would warm up and sit down for 10 minutes and then warm up again. And Kyle Kendrick of the Phillies was terrible, he still is, in the first inning. And I talked to him after a game and pointed this out to him about Bouton. He thought it was really cool. The next start, he actually split his warm up. I felt so proud. And he got bombed, so it didn't make any difference whatsoever. So, that's why I'm here and I'm not in the clubhouse very often, but I did get entertained by that. David?
Yes. Thank you, Dave. You mentioned that the home team wins 54% of the time. Have you tried to figure out how much of that 4% edge comes from the bottom of the first inning effect?
I did. It's 58%. 58% of that difference comes from the first inning.
Okay.
It's not batting last. It's playing the first inning.
Okay. Thank you.
So you got the correlation between long top of the first and then scoring in the bottom of the first.
Yes.
Does that hold for any other innings? And I realize you can't do that for, you know, for full time, but even just on run scored on the top of the second and take that up to
it's a wonderful question. I did not do the actual elapsed time for other innings because the programming is such a monster. But all of my other surrogates, scoring, number of pitches, number of batters, they don't hold. It's only the first inning. This is not a leadoff of it. It's a first inning effect, clearly.
Hey, Dave.
Michael?
First of all, great job.
Thanks.
I have no questions about your methodology for once.
I must have done something right.
No, the only question I had is, did you draw a distinction in looking at the first inning between innings in which the visiting team scored and innings in which they did not?
Yes, I did. And the time matters much more than the runs. Those surrogates I used for the long first inning, runs, batters, and pitches, the runs is the least important.
Okay. The reason I was thinking along the lines of if the visiting team got a leadoff home run and then three quick outs versus the visiting team having six batters come up.
Absolutely. But that's – I wish I had more games with the actual length of the top of the first, of course. You can always find a single game that will be an exception.
No, I understand that.
But the long – in fact, Bill, you're here, aren't you, Bill, someplace? That Bill was just telling me today, ever since last year when he goes to a game, he looks at the scoreboard clock and says, you know, the top of the first inning is pretty long. That's going to be bad in the bottom of the first. So it makes me feel really good that he said that.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Mark?
You may have come up with a new strategic alternative for the whole home team's manager. Generally, on using his challenge, he's reluctant to use it in the first inning. But if he thinks it's going to be a close call and delay things 3 or 4 minutes.
Pray for a rain delay? Use it as a challenge? That's excellent. Oh, that's devious. I really like that.
Did you take into account the difference of stadium structure and like a pitcher's park, a predominantly pitcher's park versus a predominantly batter's park?
I did not do a park effect exhaustively, but the cursory part I did in that, I didn't see anything.
And just as a follow-up to that, do you think the spike for the 1970s would have anything to do with AstroTurf?
No.
Teams coming from non-AstroTurf.
If you make me guess on the spike in the 1970s, travel ramped way up because in 1969, of course, we got four new teams. And so there was more travel. There was even though the average didn't change a lot, individual teams now play about 55 series a year. They play about 30, they take about 35 trips overall, and they have about 14 home stands. That what did not used to be true a long time ago. So the only possible dream I have is the travel pattern changed in the 70s because of the four new teams. But I don't hold me to that one. I still don't have a good answer for that one. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, you made the graph about miles traveled and how it affected winning percentage and you didn't find a relationship. Did you take into account the fact that you're traveling to a specific city with a specific team? For example, in the early ones pre-1958, you'd be traveling to the St. Louis Browns, who were notoriously horrible, which could make a big effect on your winning percentage versus miles traveled. Was that encountered in that picker?
No, I thought about that, but that's like another dimension on all of the arrays. You know, what's the overall quality of the team you're going to? And I don't have an answer, even a guess, of that one way or the other. I decided to duck that one because I had enough variables going on in this.
Thank
one.
You.
Last question, he says.
I'm wondering if you looked at all at the game of the week effect, because sometimes you play that Sunday night game on ESPN, yep. And then you end up traveling. Your getaway day is your getaway night. Did you look into that at all with all of your travel
When the
stuff?
NFL started Monday Night Football, there was this big rush that teams that played on Monday night did worse the following Sunday, which was apparently true for half the teams for 1 year or something like that. So that's not a real fact. The problem is for the game of the week, for the Sunday night game of the week for baseball, it's not enough games. I mean, if it's not like at least 12,000 games, I'm very leery about analyzing the. It could, on an individual anecdotal kind of basis, you bet it could be true, but I'm not going to find it because my stuff is much, much coarser than that.
Your Dodgers lost Monday and Tuesday, played the game of the week on Sunday.
Yeah, but they won Wednesday and Thursday.
They're my Dodgers, too.
All right. Okay, that's it? Okay.